Notes from America is supported by Future Hindsight, an award-winning podcast that shares big ideas about participating in American democracy, beyond voting, but short of running for office. Join host Mila Atmos for stimulating and incisive conversations with citizen changemakers on topics ranging from gerrymandering, policing equity, and voting rights. In this election year, Future Hindsight offers an unaffiliated perspective into what's at stake and how citizens can make an impact at the local, state, and national level. You'll always come away with something hopeful. Tune in every Thursday to get engaged and stay engaged.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
What's the matter with him?
How do you know?
Hey everybody, this is Kai, and we have a podcast special for you this week. You might recognize this song. It's Slippery People by the Talking Heads, performed here by their frontman David Byrne. And, you know, it's a song that evokes thoughts about faith, not just about religion, that's in there too, but I mean faith like faith we put in people, in each other, about how we all try to navigate the challenges of our lives together. That might be why this song is a good fit for Byrne's show, American Utopia. It's a live Broadway show in which he performs his music almost as a catalyst to a wider conversation about living in a plural society. You, me, us, and what's possible if we can make that work. I was lucky enough to talk to David Byrne about all of this recently, about his music, about the show, and about the sort of musical democracy that is on his mind. So check it out, and I hope you'll enjoy it. Here you go. David, thank you so much for this time.
Thank you. Thank you for arranging this. Yeah.
So I want to start with, you spoke with a friend of mine, actually, Rich Benjamin, for The New Yorker recently, and you said something to him that really stuck with me. You were talking about the love that you feel coming from the audience while performing American Utopia, and you said, though, that you try not to take it personally, because you know it's not really about you, but you also nonetheless try to reciprocate it in the moment. And I have to say that almost made me cry, because while it's really beautiful to me, it also sounds like a lonely thing to experience. And I bring that up because it just kind of reminds me of how I felt watching the show in general and your work in general, of having these sort of overlapping, often conflicting emotions. So I don't know. I just want to start with asking you to say more about that feeling you described around love.
Okay. Like a lot of, whether it's actors or musicians, performers in general, we as audience members, we confuse the person's work with the real person. It happens all the time. People think they know an actor because they've seen them in a lot of roles, and they think that's what they're like, and that they feel like they know them personally, but you don't. Mm-hmm. That's their work. That's their job. And so I feel like a lot of the appreciation and love or whatever that's coming from the audience, I think is coming from the work, and it's not about me personally. I have to kind of try and not get a swelled head and big ego about all that, and not think, oh, they love me, they love me, I'm so great. To a large extent, it's the work that they love that is affecting them. I'm kind of the delivery service for that. And, okay, maybe I'm doing a pretty good job of it, but I also feel like there is a little bit of a difference between the work and what that means to people and me as a person.
Yeah. Well, so American Utopia in general seems to me to be interested in the, I don't know, the contradictions and challenges and joys of being social creatures. That's a lot of what I take from it, sort of craving connections as humans and the complications of that. Is that right?
Yes. A lot of it is kind of the journey of this person, kind of embodied by me and based on a lot of my own experiences, from being kind of socially awkward. And gradually, over decades, finding oneself in a little community where you feel comfortable. In my case, that might be a band. And then gradually becoming comfortable enough that you can engage with strangers and also become socially engaged, socially active in terms of issues and things like that. And for me, anyway, I find that that's a step-by-step project. The show starts with me holding a brain.
Here is a region of abundant detail. Here is a region.
So it's kind of like I'm living inside my head. And then by the end of the show, we're talking about kind of the whole society.
I mean, along those lines, when you introduce the song, Everybody's Coming to My House.
Now everybody's coming to my house, and I'm never gonna be alone.
You say that in the show that when people cover it, it comes off as this happy celebration. But for you, it was all about anxiety that everybody's coming to my house. Tell me about that. It's interesting even that you noticed the sort of difference.
Yeah, we invited a high school choir in Detroit to cover the song, to do interpretation of it.
Everybody's coming to my house. Everybody's coming.
And I don't know exactly what they did, but the feeling I got from their song was very different from the feeling I got from my recording of it.
Now everybody's coming to my house.
In my recording, you could kind of sense that this is a guy who's a little bit apprehensive about having to deal with socially with a whole bunch of people. Whereas these kids, when they did it, they couldn't wait to have a bunch of people over. They were just welcoming everyone and inviting them to come over.
To my house, I'm never gonna be alone.
And I thought that was kind of wonderful, and maybe I can learn something from this.
The show grew out of your 2018 album, so obviously it was conceived before we all experienced a lot of the hard stuff that complicates our American utopia, as it were, now. COVID, the near collapse of democracy, the reaction to George Floyd's murder. But what were you seeing in our lives that did creep into this show as you were conceiving it back then? Because it's not a literal statement about utopian America.
No, it's not that. And it's not to be taken that way, that he's either saying that we live in a utopia or me giving a prescriptive kind of directions like, well, this is what we need to do. But yes, I mean, we touch on immigration, we touch on race, we touch on voting, we touch on a lot of subjects that have since then become like their kind of main focus of our lives in some ways. But it was definitely in the air already. And it, as with a lot of things, the pandemic just threw things into kind of bigger relief. But it was more the tour. When I started thinking about how to perform this material and mix in some older material, I became very concerned with kind of what I saw happening in the world, in the country that I live in. And I thought, I need to at least acknowledge that. I'm not going to provide everybody with a lot of answers, but I have to acknowledge what's going on in the world that we live in and not only provide kind of an entertainment. Mm-hmm. Although that's kind of have to do that too. Otherwise, people Indeed. Are just going to walk out.
I mean, it is ultimately quite a joyful celebration. That's the experience of it, you know, at least watching it. I mean, people literally dance in the aisles. I watched it. I watched the HBO version, which was directed by Spike Lee. So, you know, my boyfriend and I danced on the couch instead of in the aisles. But, you know, but the film version really does still capture how much fun the audience appears to be having throughout the show. I mean, how important was that to the experience as a whole?
I thought it was very important that people kind of experience that utopia that we're talking about. Just a little bit. They just get a little taste of it, whether it's kind of dancing or the joy that I see in some of the audience. So as I said, a lot of what the show does is not prescriptive or descriptive. Mm-hmm. It's not me telling people this is what's going on, this is what I see, and this is what we should do. I want them to witness it. I want them to witness what's possible. And that's kind of, to me, what a lot of the show is about. They see what we can be. And granted, it's just a show, but it still is kind of very affirmative that way.
Yeah. Along those lines, I mean, I'm struck by the mobility of the performance. There, you know, for anyone who hasn't seen the show, all the musicians, including the drummers, are equipped to walk and move freely anywhere on the stage as they play. How did that format then shape what you were trying to achieve?
That was something I'd been kind of building to for many years.
Yeah.
I mean, I myself had kind of gone wireless for a while. And then on a tour that I did with St. Vincent, we had a brass section, and the brass section was completely mobile and wireless. And I just thought, can we take this further? Can we have everybody, even the drummers, keyboard player, can we have everybody mobile? And when we did that, these other things happen. One thing is that the stage becomes more democratic. Mm. The drummers can come to the front. They're not relegated to a platform in the back. They can be in the front, and I'm in the back. Mm-hmm. We're constantly in motion so that everybody's kind of at the front at some point. So that's a big thing. And the other thing is that by eliminating all the stuff that's on stage, it really does become about the people, how they relate to one another, and how they relate to the audience. Mm. So it's not about special effects and video screens and all the other kind of stuff that we often use in shows.
It's stripped down. I mean, and again, for people who haven't seen it, the set is also quite stripped down, you know, gray suits, gray background, without shoes. All of that, I gather, then, is about this point of just sort of it's us as humans together.
Yes, kind of just if we take everything away, all that's left is us.
It's a large company of musicians, and it must be said that it seems like an intentionally kaleidoscopic company to me in terms of race and gender and background, but, you know, also styles and instruments and roles, and it's kind of a beautiful chaos on the stage. I have to assume that is also intentional.
Well, yeah. Obviously, we want to show the diversity that exists in this country that isn't always represented on stage, but it's there. The talent is out there. And a lot of the musicians I work with, okay, we'll take the drummers. The drummers, in order to get all these different sounds, like what we'd have on recordings, they started bringing in, you know, Afro-Latin instruments and Brazilian instruments and all kinds of stuff. So there's a real drum and percussion kind of symphony going on back there to achieve all these sounds.
And now that having heard you talk about the democracy of the stage, it's also a democracy of sound, it feels like, that there's moments where it's almost cacophonous.
We tend to see it as being very organized, but yes, there's a lot of grooves going on.
Toward the end of the show, you cover Janelle Monáe's protest song, Hell You Talking About.
Say his name! Eric Garner! Say his name! Trayvon Martin!
Why'd you choose to include that?
We included that in the tour before we did the Broadway show. I felt like as an artist, as a human being, we have to reflect the world that we live in. And although we want to be entertaining, we want to also reflect, you know, what's happening around us. I heard that song a little bit before that, and just thought it was very moving and beautiful in that it doesn't tell you what to do. It just tells you this happened. Don't forget these people. Mm-hmm. These are all human beings whose lives have been taken. So, yeah, I thought that it was a beautiful way of putting that forward. She liked the idea that we were doing it. That meant a lot. Yeah, so we just kept doing that when we moved to Broadway.
It's followed by One Fine Day, the song One Fine Day, which is just this gorgeous choral rendition.
One fine day.
part of me, David, wanted to reject that song, if I'm honest. Like, it was too beautiful and too hopeful of a response. But of course I couldn't, because it is so beautiful and it is so hopeful. And I just wonder how you reacted to my experience with that.
We had exactly the same experience. When we were on tour, we would do Hell You Tell 'Em About as a like an encore number, and we couldn't follow it with anything. We felt like, no, we can't follow this with anything else. We're going to leave people with this. But then kind of for Broadway, we thought, no, we got to, let's experiment and see if we can leave people on a slightly more hopeful note. We present them kind of with reality, but then offer them the idea that we can actually move on from this. We can be better than this. So we tried a whole bunch of different endings. We did out-of-town tryouts in Boston, and I think we had like three different endings for the show. And that's the one we ended up with. It does take away some of the kind of punch that you've kind of received, the punch in the gut you've received from Hell You. But it also gives you the sense that, no, we can actually do something. This is not impossible. There is actually a possibility that we can actually move on from this.
Yeah. We talk a lot on this show, editorially on our team, about not leading people down dark alleys and leaving them there, given the stuff that we cover so often. And it sounds like a similar conversation.
That's a really good way of putting it, yeah. You want to let people see the dark alley, but you don't probably want to leave them there.
Yeah. At least the version that I saw you, the encore does become the classic Talking Heads song, Road to Nowhere. And maybe that's just a crowd-pleasing encore, but I'm guessing not from the way you think about your work. Why did you decide to end a show called American Utopia with a song called Road to Nowhere?
It is a crowd pleaser. Despite the title and the lyrics, it's actually very kind of uplifting. And that's one of those songs that does that, where what it says and how it makes you feel is sort of a contradiction.
I mean, I feel like, and this is what I said at the beginning, I honestly, for me, that's almost definitive of your music in general. Is that a fair take?
Yeah, it happens. It happens occasionally. I mean, I love that about music. It can hold contradictions like that, or it can hold different feelings and ideas and at the same time. I've often felt that in a lot of Latin music, for example, the lyrics can be really sad, very kind of melancholy and tragic, but the music is giving you hope. It doesn't say anything in words, but it gives the singer and the listener hope. So you have these two different things kind of in balance, trying to achieve a balance between each other. And I thought, music can do that. You can't do that in too many forms.
Does that song, how does the meaning feel now compared to when you first wrote it?
It has stayed as being kind of uplifting despite what it says. I mean, if we took it literally, people would think, oh, he thinks we're in a hopeless situation, climate change, everything else. We're just going to hell in a handbasket. And he's just saying, well, it's been a nice ride. Here we go. we're all going down with the ship here. I don't think that's what comes across. Mm-hmm. But as I said, that's what music can do.
David Byrne's American Utopia is running at Broadway's St. James Theater through early April. You can also stream a filmed version directed by Spike Lee on HBO Max. And you can find us on Sunday evenings, 6 p.m. Eastern. Stream it at wnyc.org/radio. See you there.